Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey, my name is Laura Osnes.
My name is Jeremy Jordan, and you're listening to 11,
the official theater podcast.
Hello and welcome to 11, the official theatre podcast that brings the biggest stars and creatives together in one place to discuss life in the arts. Now that the original Broadway stars of the hit Frank Wildhorn musical that are set to reunite to mark the 10th anniversary since its opening on Broadway, but this time they're across the pond in London for an exclusive performance of Bonnie and Clyde in concert. Set to headline the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, a venue that's undergone a multi-million pound renovation, the show will play to audiences this coming January 18th. But for its stars of the show, 10 years later it might be, but this is a reunion of many parts, who revealed to me here that they've only sung these songs together once since their closing in New York. So why now? Why London? And why return to a show that they both openly admit has helped bring them to new and often unexpected international audiences? Well, let's find out, as here in this exclusive first interview, it's time to discuss Raising Hell with the newly announced special concert version of Bonnie and Clyde in the West End, what to expect from London audiences, why they believe the show has moved to a cult status since their closure, working with genius composer Frank Wildhorn, finding the truth in their respective characters, why singing Dying Ain't So Bad and Raise a Little Hell isn't something they do kinda ever, and why closing on Broadway was just the beginning for this pair of belters. Yes, it's the incredible and original stars Laura Osnes and Jeremy Jordan on this, an extra special episode of 11, the official theatre podcast. To meet with current restrictions and to stop the possible spread of COVID-19, Laura, Jeremy and I connected for this conversation digitally, so please forgive any brief moments while we wait for the internet to catch up. Enjoy. They're two of the biggest names on Broadway that are about to reunite for an exclusive concert version of their signature roles in hit musical Bonnie and Clyde at the iconic Theatre Royal Drury Lane in London's West End. And I'm thrilled to say that they are here with me now for this, an exclusive first interview about this very, very exciting reunion. So she is the ultimate leading lady. It's wee Bonnie herself. Please help me welcome first, it's Laura Osnes. Hi, Laura.
Hello. So happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. And he's the not so bad boy Clyde that's got a heart of gold and a voice to match. Hi, Jeremy Jordan.
Well, hello.
Thank you both so much for being here. It's very, very exciting because we are literally a matter of days away from this very exciting news coming out. And actually, when people get the opportunity to listen to this episode, the news is going to be out. Bonnie and Clyde, the concert in London's West End. It feels like a dream to even say it out loud. It's been a long time coming and it's very exciting for us as fans. And I'd love to get the opportunity today just to ask you lots of questions about the opportunity to do this. So I guess sort of the most cliche of cliche questions to start with, Jeremy, but Bonnie and Clyde in concert at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane. I mean, are you excited?
Absolutely. I mean, this is, we started this back in 2010. Laura did it before that. So it's been a long time that we've been sort of, well, on and off working on it. Well, it's been more off than on lately, but, you know, they've teased it, you know, going other places other than Broadway for a long time. So that we're getting to come and just to do this is going to be a lot of fun. And we'll have to tap into ourselves 10 years ago, which is when we did this on Broadway. And it'll be great. I can't wait. I'll take any opportunity to sing with Miss Osnes over there.
Laura, when this opportunity came up for you, was this an easy yes, or did you have to sort of take a beat and think, oh gosh, it's a very beloved role to me. Do I sort of want to go back?
Oh yeah, no, it was an easy yes, except for the fact in the back of my head that I was like, can I still sing that? no, but like emotionally, of course, it was very exciting to think about, obviously revisiting these roles and these songs and this beloved show. And yeah, same thing, getting to sing with Jer. But it was like, wow, I haven't sung Dying Ain't So Bad in 10 years. Like it's not a song I sing ever. I sing How About a Dance all the time. That is a song that is continually in my concert repertoire. But it's going to be, I'm like, I got to get back in shape for this.
I've sung Dying Ain't So Bad. I mean, come on.
I know.
And the fans' reaction as well. I mean, I'm sort of, we are a couple of days out from it actually being announced, and I'm sort of trying to forethink exactly what the fan reaction is going to be like. But I think it's pretty safe to say that it's going to be insane. I mean, the love for this show is international, and it just feels like it constantly grows all the time. And I imagine that's obviously the beauty of things like YouTube and also cast recordings as well. Jeremy, what do you actually think fans are going to be like when this news goes out? Do you think that they would actually believe that Bonnie and Clyde and you two reuniting together would happen again? Or do you think that they might have sort of dared to dream, but think, oh, maybe it won't?
I mean, yeah, I think people would have imagined that we could maybe do something again. I don't think that that's out of the realm of belief, but yeah, I think people are going to be really excited about it. It did sort of take off after we did not do so well on Broadway itself. And, you know, it's become this big cult favorite, and, you know, all around the world, people have done productions of it from, you know, the high school level all the way up to, you know, pretty decent size. Well, not quite the West End, but, you know, it's a pretty big show. And it's something that we really poured our hearts into. And I think that that shows when people listen to the recording and watch their various bootlegs that are out there.
And there certainly definitely are a few. And it's so interesting that you mention about the sort of the growth and the love of it, and of course the cast album and so on and so forth, because some of these songs are sung in so many different types of sort of concert versions and shows, and people just immediately connect with the score. And do you think, Laura, that's one of the reasons why I think the reaction perhaps will be so huge when this news comes out? Because this is a fantastic, fantastic score.
Yeah, well, we all fell in love with it, obviously. And I think the cool thing about Frank's score is that he works so much internationally. So the show has been translated into several languages and done across the world. And I think that's why it has such an international appeal. And I am so grateful for the cast album, which has allowed the show to live on past our 2-month short in Love and Life on Broadway.
Do you think, Jeremy, that your perspective on the character perhaps now, of course, this isn't a full production, but it is a concert version at this signature venue that I mentioned, so it certainly will feel like the real deal. Do you think that your perspective on the character 10 years on is slightly different? Do you think it will have changed?
Yeah, I think it will have changed for sure. I mean, I've certainly lived a lot more than I had 10 years ago. You know, I have faced a few more things in my life that maybe I hadn't faced before. Granted, I'm much older than Clyde was before he died now. And, you know, I have a family now, which is something that he never really had, at least not of his own. But I do think those sort of things, you know, offer a different, unique perspective on things. But I think it's going to be more of me trying to tap into my younger self, you know, maybe with a few lessons learned, you know, throughout the years. I mean, I haven't luckily been involved in any shootouts or bank robberies. So, you know, not since I was really young, you know, it's been a long time since I've done those sorts of things.
I love that. No shootouts. Not this sort of 10 years anyway, perhaps maybe the next one.
Yeah.
Laurie, you mentioned about the sort of the reaction and the fans, and I imagine what it's going to mean like for audience members. But for you as an individual, as an actor, I feel like it's quite rare that you get the opportunity to be able to go back to a role 10 years later. And for you, do you find that prospect quite exciting?
Absolutely. Of course, as Jeremy said, we've all lived more life and we have new perspectives and new wisdom and growth and development that has all happened in the last 10 years. So as artists and as people. So I think it will be really exciting to revisit. I also like coach kids on this material a lot. And so I now know how to define the story that Bonnie goes on in, you know, kind of throughout this musical and throughout, you know, a lot of these songs, just because I've had to dictate it to people and help kind of teach it and explain how I was feeling while playing the role and singing these songs. So I think it's going to be really special for me to get to revisit and kind of get a taste of my own medicine in a way, and what I like to demand of other people who are attempting to sing this music that now, you know, I'll get to also bring kind of in a new and exciting way.
So it's essentially Laura Osnes having taught Laura Osnes, who is now teaching Laura Osnes. It's almost like you teaching yourself.
Yeah, kind of. Well, it's, you know, back in the day when we did it, it's like, you know, we had rehearsal and we figured out backstory and, you know, developed so many beautiful things. But then when you try to explain that to someone else, to be like, okay, let me tell you what I was feeling so that you can know how to be in Bonnie's shoes without all of that rehearsal and without all of that development. And yeah, I feel like there's such a specific journey that I went on that I didn't know how to define at the time. I just kind of did it. But now there's like, as we were saying, like a new depth and a new wisdom and a new complexity to it that I feel like will be very fun to revisit. However, yes, I feel old now.
Jeremy, and because these are based on real people as well, and of course the musical adaptation requires a little bit of musicality and the musical magic to be able to make it work and adapt for the stage, but how true to their sort of real life and their stories is this script and this music?
You know, when we were developing it, we tried, you know, we all read a bunch about them and tried to keep a lot of it pretty close. You know, of course, there's like things that we skipped over, but I definitely tried to push for as much, you know, honesty and things that really happened as possible. Of course, you know, have to condense a lot of it. But I do think for the most part, we stuck to the facts, at least a version of the facts, because there are a lot of different sides of the stories. There's a lot of different people that wrote different books about it and, you know, tried to skirt all of those. As far as I can remember, we didn't really make anything up, right? I mean, maybe like the preacher role, like there are a few of the supporting characters, you know, with sort of amalgamations of society and different people, but like they're immediate families, and all the main characters are all, you know, pretty clear and all derived from source material that we didn't stray too far away from. And like I said, we had to leave a lot of stuff out.
Right.
Yeah. I think most of the stories we told were pretty true, at least, you know, truncated versions of them.
And because they are based on truth, is there that sort of a beautiful balance in a musical? But I can imagine when you're trying to write a score or a script, it's quite difficult to sort of not necessarily glorify death and murder and theft, but also to try and make them likable as individuals as well. So therefore, as a character, you actually warm to them and want them to, in some way, be enjoyable to watch on stage. That feels like a very tight balance, but I can imagine as an actor, Jeremy, that's quite exciting.
Well, Bonnie never killed anybody, at least not to anybody's knowledge. She might have shot a gun once or twice. Clyde only killed I think maybe only 3 people. It was not a lot. I can't remember. Don't quote me on that one. But it was always
9 total.
There you go. They though, but Clyde 9. Himself, because the right, other Bonnie... people that were with them also helped in times.
Yeah.
But you know, it was always about kill or be killed. You know, it was very much like his, you know, mangled version of self-defense. He's like, well, it's either me or them. Or us or them. And if they're going to come at us with guns, then we have to have guns to take it back to them. And there are, like I said, varying accounts, but I think we really tried to play into the romance of everything and really set up and take time to build their relationship. And we all know what's going to happen. And so we can sort of take the audience on a journey that leads them to think, well, maybe it'll be different. Then when it all goes to hell, it feels that much more, you know, devastating and, you know, and surprising. And maybe we find ourselves a little bit conflicted because we were rooting for these people that, you know, have a very infamous reputation.
And Laura, would you agree that it is their relationship very much so that is the heartbeat of this musical and perhaps why you think it has connected, not just musically, but in that theater, why people really did love it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think Frank is really good about writing. He loves, you know, a romance story. And so I think that is definitely the heartbeat. But what was cool, I found in our research too, in making these characters empathetic, is trying to dissect why they became the way that they did. And going back to Bonnie's dream of, she wanted to be on Broadway. She spent the first money she ever got, she went and got a glamour shot. You know what I mean? Like she didn't want to be like everyone else around her. And Clyde was the same way. They wanted to break free. And when they met each other, it was that electricity that of needing to get out and wanting to be more than everyone who had come before them. that life on the run was exciting to them. So it's, and Clyde was sexually abused in prison. Both, he had been on the run starving as a kid. You know, it's like you see their pasts and how they got to where they are. Not that it's ever justified or okay. We thought that was important to show how these people became who they were, why they became who they were, what they saw in each other, and what propelled them to keep going. That they were really only on the run for 2 years, maybe less than 2 years before they were, you know, shot and killed. But that's why Bonnie even sings, she's like, I would rather have lived 2 years with you than a whole lifetime without you.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the sort of thing that only lasts for so long, you know. If right. they'd been going for 20
it's
years,
not sustainable.
The tune wouldn't be the same. And I think it's something that, you know, that the comment on that the show makes is that sort of society and the people around them and how life was around them pushed them to this. You know, these two people who are incredibly enthusiastic about life and really just wanted to break out and do something big, didn't have the means to do it in any other way than to go rob a bank. And then they were going to go start their life, but they had to get the money, you know, and then it just became about staying alive, you know, and they right. really just wanted to have this grand life together. And they just had no means to accomplish that without committing a crime.
And Laura, I sort of feel like hating them is the easiest of the options, but actually understanding the why behind it is actually the real truth. And that's where it becomes, I think the show becomes its own, is that it's actually very intelligent and it gives you the reasons as to why they make the decisions.
And you have to remember too, you know, people know Bonnie and Clyde as this like infamous murderous couple, which is, you know, partially true who they were and what they became known as, but they were also human. They were real people who felt feelings and had fears and insecurities and dreams and passion. And so exploring all of that and making them human and remembering their feelings, because we saw the excitement of their life on the run, but then we also saw them freaking scared, you know, when they were about to get shot. And as Jeremy said, it's like, it's him or me. And what are we going to do? And thank God they had each other.
Well, I think one thing that this sort of makes me think of is going back to play them as 10 years later, having lived life experience. I think it's, for me, it's going to be an approach of like, they just didn't know how to deal with the cards they were dealt. They didn't know how to deal with the road, the path that they had chosen for themselves. They didn't have any idea of how to they weren't emotionally equipped to handle any of this. And so the way that they handled it was just in the most unhealthy way.
Right.
And so I don't know if I ever really fully considered that back in the day, but I've been to therapy now and learned a lot.
Yeah.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
Laura, can I just push back on something you said more towards the beginning of our conversation? And that is that it's, you think you haven't sung Dying Ain't So Bad since you sung it on Broadway. Do you really think that's true? I'm sort of quite surprised by that.
I sang it once at the reunion concert, the Frank and Friends reunion concert at 54 Below. It's a song that for me, taken out of context, can't be done justice. So when kids try to sing it, I'm like, are you sure? Are you sure? Because it's just... It's not worth singing. It's not worth singing if you can't give it what it demands. And for me, it's a song that I had to go on Bonnie's journey for an hour and a half before I could sing that song truthfully and realistically in the middle of the show. So plucked out of context and done in a concert, I just don't think you can't do it justice.
Yeah, I agree. There are a lot of songs like that. I mean, Raise a Little Hell for me is kind of like that as well. Not only is it a pain in the ass to sing, but it's so fraught with everything that came before it. The only time I've ever done it is like in a medley when I just give a little taste of it, you know.
A snippet.
Yeah.
Laura, it's interesting what you mentioned about it being in the context of the show, because I think actually the lead into the song is where you sort of feel like something's changing, because it's part of a dialogue, and it perhaps it's not word for word, but it's about they're going to kill him and then they're going to come for you. And it is her immediate response. It's not supposed to be a beautiful moment of, isn't this a lovely song I'm singing about how much I love him? It's her response saying back, I know where I am and where I'm going. And I think that alludes to your point, which is actually that it only sits where it sits and perhaps nowhere else.
Yeah, thank you for knowing the lead-in. I'm quite impressed. Is that on the album? I don't know if it is. It starts very defensively to Blanche, like, dying ain't so bad, you know, like, hey, you. And she's defensive. And then when Blanche walks away, then it becomes internal and vulnerable. I only hope that I go first. Mm-hmm. God, I can't live without him.
Yeah.
And then emotional in her journal. And then the bridge is like, I never wanted to be everyone else. Here I am. You're getting my masterclass. Here we go. No, but it's like, she never wanted to be the people who came before her. And then I literally, like, that final chorus is like, it's her last words. It's her epitaph. It's the words that are going to go, like, you have to sing that as if you have a gun to your head.
And it only works in that moment. It's not like, that's not like her mantra. Like, that's not how she lives her life. It only works in that moment of, like, despair and defense and desperation. Like, as so many people look at that song, like, oh, it's such a beautiful sentiment. You're like, no, like, this is someone who's desperate, who has no choice but to have this outlook.
Jeremy, in terms of audiences, doing this at the Theatre Royal Drury Lane, I mean, it's an iconic signature venue. I think it's part of sort of the top three alongside the Palladium and the Colosseum as the biggest, most exciting venues that London has to offer on the world stage. And for you getting to do this show in that space with, I think, quite a couple, if not 3,000 people, a lot of London audiences who have, most of whom I imagine probably haven't seen the show, but come along loving it. For you, is that strange that it's in a completely different side of the world and yet they're obsessed and they love it and they want to see you guys together in this show? Or is that exciting? Or is, how do you approach it?
I think it's exciting. I mean, aside from like the little reunion concert thing that we did at 54 Below, which is the opposite because it's like 100 some odd seats, we never played this show to full houses. Like we ran for less than 2 months, I mean, including previews, and houses were half empty most of the time, you know, and we put our whole hearts into it, but it's been a long time since we've felt, and I'm probably never even come close to feeling what kind of energy that we're going to feel it at this place. So, you know, it is a bit of a homecoming, but it's also something completely new. You know, it's going to be a completely new experience for us, 100%, you know, because yeah, a lot of people won't have seen it, but it's less that and more of the like, what could this show have been, you know, if we were already stars at that point, which we weren't, not really. Well, she was more of a name than I was, but we weren't, you know, and the show wasn't loved at that point. People were still coming with question marks, you know, and Laura and I have gotten used to that kind of response because we do concerts and cabarets and stuff like that and have made names for ourselves since then, but we didn't have a right to expect that. And we certainly didn't have that expectation.
Do you agree, Laura?
Yeah, 100%. I haven't performed in London like Jeremy has. So I think Jeremy has his like London audience that is, you know, so excited, not only to see him, but to see this. And then to see us, I feel like I've had the opportunity to a few times and it just hasn't worked out. So I'm excited to get to kind of make my London performance debut.
Well, I'll tell you right offhand, the best audiences that I've ever had have been in London. I mean, hands down, you know, in terms of per person, you know, you had bigger venues, smaller venues, but like, if you take the ratio of it all, I think that the London audiences have always been the best, at least for me.
Aww.
They're known to be very, very docile and genteel. But
yes.
I have not had that experience.
I was about to say, I've been to one of your concerts. It's never, ever, ever like that. They just clap, scream, and cheer. That's all they do from start to end. They love it.
Well, I hope it's the same because it's fun.
It will be the same, definitely. And also, inside is a Theatre Royal Drury Lane, which I know I keep going on about it, but this is such our beloved venue. And it's also had a massive facelift. I mean, like 40 something million pounds. It's been getting the Botox and everything treatment. So you're like one of the first concerts to
actually
be on there.
We're going to have the whole
there.
Set. No, I have no idea. I don't think so, but maybe. I hurt myself so many times on that set.
I know you did. Oh my gosh, we both did.
Laura, we've spoken about its time on Broadway, and I think it's just good to acknowledge that unfortunately it didn't get the time that it deserved. I think it's probably the understatement of this entire interview. Why do you think that was? Is there a specific reason you think 10 years on, as you can put your finger on perhaps, just why then wasn't the time, but perhaps now is?
We started previews November 1st and opened December 1st. And I got to be honest, it's not a holiday tourist production. So I think the timing of it was not the best. And then January tends to be the slowest month on Broadway. Tourism stops. Everyone spent their money at Christmas. No one comes to New York in January. So if you don't have enough of a footing, and you know, pre-sales and a time to establish yourself and your reputation, a word of mouth to sell those tickets by January, most things closed January 6th, but they opened the year before, or they opened the summer before, and we had just opened and I don't think didn't have time. So I think a lot of it was the timing, unfortunately. I do think the show was great. It wasn't a perfect show, but you know, once we announced that we were closing, in the final week and a half of performances, the theater was packed. I think it was one that people wanted to see eventually, but it wasn't their like first choice holiday show. And, you know, it just, I think a lot of it was just a money thing and a timing thing. And you see kind of the crappy side of the business side of Broadway, that there are a lot of bad shows that run because they have great producers and a word of mouth or a title that people know and love. And a lot of great shows that close because they're artful and unique and small and, you know, don't quite have the thing behind them to keep them running. So it's, yeah, I think there are a lot of factors.
Jeremy, do you think if the show opened 2022, let's say next year, do you think it would be slightly different?
Well, it depends. I mean, I think it all, if, you know, if it had Laura and I, sure. Because we're completely different, but part of the reason we are who we are is because of Bonnie and Clyde, ironically. And, you know, yeah, it's all about how, you know, it's all business stuff. You know, I don't think that the show was ahead of its time. I don't think it was like something that, you know, people just didn't get. I just think they didn't come see it. And for whatever reason, people didn't show up, and that's why it never went anywhere. And then we did the album, you know, we scraped together every last penny that we had and we made the album. And then people were like, oh, dang.
Yeah. We actually recorded the album after we closed. Remember, yeah. We closed December 31st or December 30th or something. Yeah. We all got back together January 2nd or 3rd and recorded the album. Oh, I was going to say the other reason Bonnie and Clyde had to close is because Jeremy had to do Newsies. And I'm like, your whole trajectory would have changed had you chose Bonnie and Clyde, right? You had to choose between the two. You chose Bonnie and Clyde, but then Bonnie and Clyde closed. So then you were able to do both. You got to do Newsies in the spring.
Well, I didn't choose because Newsies came like literally 6 months after we closed at Paper Mill. Like it was never intended to go to Broadway. It was supposed to be a tour. And yeah, so I was going to do Bonnie and Clyde over a tour. Yeah, man. But you know, that's how the cookie crumbled, as they say. But you know,
yeah,
of course I'm grateful, but I think everybody, it affected other people. And listen, Laura got a Tony nomination 6 months later, you know, people remembered it in their own, in various ways. And it became, now it has its, you know, icon status. So.
While of course we get you both back together, we also get to welcome some new people to the Bonnie and Clyde family, because you're going to get some lovely people that are from where I'm from here in London. We're going to get to join the family and be one of the first people to get to do that. And while we can't necessarily talk about names, I think we know they are pretty top dollar in terms of the cast. It's just going to be exquisite. And I can imagine for you, Laura, that's quite exciting that you get some new people to play with on stage.
Totally. I think it's going to help make the experience singular. Like we're not 100% trying to recreate what happened. Like Jeremy and I will get tonight, and that's gonna be so special and great.
Yeah, I'm torn about it, to be honest with you. I mean, I loved our Bonnie and Clyde on Broadway family and the show that we've done previous to Broadway, but you know, they'll live in our hearts, and we'll go forward, and you know, part of it will be for them.
Can't believe that we're actually getting live theatre back here in the West End. It's very shortly just about to be our sort of big unlock day, which feels like the first step back towards some sense of normality. And this is certainly going to be news for that. So thank you so much for your time today. It's such a pleasure to get to talk about, as I embarrassed myself a little bit, even telling you the dialogue into the show. So thank you not for exiting the Zoom and being like, he is a bit of a super fan, but I do love this show very much. So thank you very much for sticking with me. And I will see you in January 2022 at that venue that I keep mentioning for Bonnie and Clyde concert. It's going to be absolutely incredible. So thank you so much, and see you very, very soon.
Thank you.
Bye. Thanks.
You've been listening to 11, the official theatre podcast. Find out more about 11 at 11podcast.com or via the Broadway Podcast Network.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.